Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. We are the rugby podcast that is here with you 52 weeks in the year because we love rugby that much, and somewhere in some corner of the globe there is always some rugby action happening, but what's more, there's always rugby to talk about. It's the same holy trinity as well. I'm Tim, I am sober, feeling refreshed, feeling energised, and to my left I have two shells of men, broken men. Jonathan Beardmore and Phil Largan.
Hello, Tim Cocker.
Hello, Tim.
Man, looking at you guys. I reckon, legitimately, I could probably take you both in a fight right now.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm pretty...
Honestly, you think this is bad? Yesterday morning was the most hungover I have been in years. I don't mean, I have been in some bad state the last 2 years. I've drank an awful lot over the last 2 years. But yesterday, it was just ungodly, my hangover.
So this is rugby related as well, because
it is.
This is a weekend which is bearing the fruit of 2 years of fantasy rugby draft, and our fantasy rugby league.
That's exactly right.
And one of the people, it wasn't part of any friendship group when we started. It was a lover rugby brought this fella in.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it was it's trophy giving, even though Bryn didn't bring the trophy. Trophy giving of our rugby fantasy league, where, you know, every year potentially we're now going to give out a trophy after 2 days sailing around Falmouth, which is rather nice.
But it's a great example of the connections through rugby. So, friend of ours, Rob Hamlet,
acquaintance
who plays down at OBs, Old Bristolians in Bristol, is friends.
Yeah, so you said that wrong. It's Old Bristolians.
Okay. Friends with a chap called Ollie Poole, who invited us. His old man has a place down there. He has a place down there. His old man has a couple of boats down there, and
four.
we spent a couple of very, very enjoyable days sailing, a bit of fishing,
swimming, diving off the boat.
Oh my god! Yeah, so we took the boat out about, I don't know, maybe a mile offshore, something like that. It's quite far. and I jumped in. I thought it was fine. The water seemed absolutely fine. But it's just terrifying. It's just so vast. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be in some real difficulty.
Especially with your piece just dangling around in the water. That's a huge bit of bait.
Well,
there,
yeah. The mackerel were biting.
A couple of pollock. Very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, it was great fun. So thank you very much to Ollie, to his dad, Andrew Poole, the former commander of... Commodore of Falmouth Yacht Club, who took us out sailing on the Saturday.
But simultaneously, apologies for the substandard quality of Phil and JB's chat in
yes,
this podcast.
Right. Yeah.
Which we'll be covering off some rugby that's been happening this weekend. Equally, as we mentioned, there's not as much as normal. So the really cool thing is it gives us a chance to get into some areas either we've missed, either that haven't been covered off, or maybe burning questions that you want us to cover. And there's been loads of tweets that have come into @rugbypodcast, which is where you can find us, and thank you for those. We'll get through whatever we can during this podcast. But it is the off-season for many of our podcast, other rugby podcasts, and for rugby players. And
what off-season?
Yeah, exactly. There is no such thing for us. But Phil, you have been taking a look at what some rugby players have been up to.
I certainly have been doing. So it's interesting now because you're in this period where some of them are back training back full-time in pre-season now.
Mm-hmm.
And others, particularly those who've been in internationals or had injuries, are doing interesting and fun things. So I've got...
This is the first year I can remember that there has been a gap so early in the calendar. There always seems to be something going on. Like, you think the season's finished and there's more Super Rugby... But this is the first year I can remember in ages. Like last year, of course, it was the Lions.
Yeah.
So they played. When did they do their tests?
Around this time. Yeah, I think this weekend would have been the second test. The weekend of the second test.
Second test, and then the third test after that. Yeah, so it was a bit later on.
Yeah. So four quick questions, two multiple choice and two not multiple choice guessing players. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First question.
Yeah.
Jonathan Joseph went to watch his sister play for Loughborough Lightning. But what sport was she playing?
Beep.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh.
I think I know that one.
Yep.
Can we have an extra point for what team they were playing?
No.
No.
I don't know what team they were playing.
I think I know
actually.
That as well. Anyway.
Oh wow. Okay, so I was going to do that as multiple choice, but obviously you don't need it.
No, we got it.
Second question, you might need this one to be multiple choice unless you've seen the specific tweets or Instagram posts. Matt Gitto has got himself a new pet.
Ooh.
But what is it?
Bloody hell.
Is it a micro pig, an aardvark, or a hedgehog?
Ooh, that's interesting. Where's he living? Is he still in south of France?
Japan, I think.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Okay. Joe Marler was having some fun this weekend, and he was in fancy dress in a full Welsh kit.
Oh, wow.
Dressed as a Welsh international, or former Welsh international.
No. Oh.
But who was he dressed as?
Okay. Former Welsh international.
Former Welsh international.
Okay, I'll just have a guess. Okay.
And final question. Which player was rolling around in the sunshine, topless in the sunshine, on a mobility scooter due to a recent knee operation?
Knee operation. Interesting.
Okay. Shall we go through the the answers?
Yeah.
First question, Jonathan Joseph's sister.
Netball Super League. Northern Thunder?
No, it was Loughborough Lightning v Manchester Thunder.
Oh. No, it was Northern Thunder.
Called Manchester Thunder.
I thought it was called Netball.
Coached
by who?
It was the semi-finals. Coached by Gary Neville's
that is correct.
Sister.
Tracy Neville. My beloved Manchester Thunder.
Tracy Neville. And I don't know who won it, but the semi-finals were on BT Sport. So
were they?
The other semi-final was Team Bath against Wasps.
Mm.
Wasps have got a Super League Netball team.
Yeah.
You weren't covering either of these games, were you, Tim?
I was not.
No. Reporting on them. Okay, question number two. Matt Gitto's pet.
There is no... Right, okay. So this is just by deduction. There's no way you're domesticating A, a hedgehog, or B, an aardvark. It's a micro pig?
I said aardvark because it's the least likely. But I'm sure it's not that, but anyway.
It was a hedgehog.
What?
Really?
What?
Yeah. Don't ask me. He's posted a few pictures of his new pet, the hedgehog.
Okay, then.
Apparently, if you see a hedgehog, you're supposed to call someone and let them know in England.
Are you?
Yeah, apparently so. Or maybe that's just Manchester. I don't know.
Why is that then?
I don't know. I think when I first moved into my house, like 12 years ago, we saw a hedgehog the day we moved in, and the neighbour went, "Oh, you meant to let someone know if you see one."
Who meant to?
I don't know. I can't remember who I called.
Who was in this call centre?
RSPCA.
I don't know. Maybe I imagine. Did I dream this? Was I on some mind altering drugs at the time?
I'd hate that job. Oh, the phone's going again. What? Someone's seeing the hedgehog.
Okay, question number three. So it's one point each. Joe Marler, who did he dress up as?
I'm going to say Neville Southall.
Neville Southall. That's interesting.
Welsh rugby player. Yeah, because I was wondering if you're thinking, because we've got an England, because Owen Farrell was on his side there as the England goalkeeper.
I like that, with the full gloves and everything.
I was trying to think of a Welsh player that would be easy to do in fancy dress. So yeah. I said Colin Jarvis.
Failing that, right, Neil Ruddock. I think it's football.
So, it's not football. It is rugby.
You go, JPR Williams, big sideburns.
Colin Jarvis is close, actually. I assume he was Adam Jones. It actually could have been a Colin Jarvis outfit.
But damn it.
Big yeah, curly. I was thinking big hair.
Big hair.
Why didn't I think of Adam Jones? Damn it.
So it's still 1-1.
Yeah.
And finally, which player was rolling in the sunshine on a mobility scooter due to recent knee op?
You know what I can think of with a knee op is Cameron Redpath.
The only person I could think of was Sam Warburton, but he's way past his operation, but that's the only one I wrote.
I was tempted to do this as multiple choice. So another couple of people who have had knee ops.
Yeah.
Tom Willis being one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Willis, not Tom Willis, Jack Willis.
Ben Obama. Right. You're having still, it's fine.
God. But it wasn't, it was neither of them, it was pod favourite Ellis Genge.
Of course. If anyone's going to be on a mobility scooter.
Top of us rolling round Leicester on his scooter.
Yeah, Sam Warburton is not going to do that. What are we talking about? Amazing. That's brilliant.
There you go.
There's loads of pictures of rugby lads on their off season who've been involved in internationals just in sunny climes and just young men in incredibly fine shape at poolside parties.
In some rather erotic tin.
No, they're going to be having a very good time.
Just enjoying themselves.
There's a good video of Hoggy and
Greg Laidlaw.
Singing.
What are they singing? Because I didn't understand. It sounded
Welsh, but it could be.
It sounded Welsh or Irish. Not,
something like that. Yeah,
there's not a native Scottish language. It's
BBC Alba.
Yeah.
Native Scottish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
BBC Alba is
Isn't Alba, yeah,
like the Scottish language?
Alba's the name for Scotland in Celtic, yeah. I say.
So you've got.
Oh, okay. God, I'm so ignorant of this. I didn't know. There's a very, very strong dialect and different words, but I didn't think there was a whole language in the way that there is Welsh and Irish.
If I'm correct.
Gaelic and Welsh, sorry.
Yeah, so obviously it's Gaelic, obviously it's Welsh. The Scottish language is so rare that I think there's only like a couple of guys left of who can pass it on. It's really, really rare. Mm. And maybe that's a different language up in Scotland, I don't know.
Yeah, they were singing, I think it's a famous Scottish song, but not one that I know.
By like Bay City Rollers or someone?
Scottish bands.
There must be other Scottish bands too.
Are Bay City Rollers Scottish?
Yeah, I think they are. On it's him.
Well, they certainly wore kilts and stuff. I don't know if
close
they're actually
enough.
Scottish, but yeah.
There you go.
Very good. Very good.
1-1 draw.
Yeah. It was a 1-1.
They're watching Spain play.
Actually, that's one thing I was going to say. Is there anything we can take from football as we look at rugby? It's the big thing at the minute.
So, well, there are two big things for me at the moment. One, which has been quite well highlighted, certainly after yesterday's Portugal game, is the way that players treat and speak to and react to referees.
Mm-hmm.
And they scream and shout and try and intimidate them.
Yeah.
To try and get the result that they want.
They all behave like Owen Farrell.
The pictures of Ronaldo.
Owen Farrell's not nearly the worst in rugby. There are far worse.
Do you
worse.
Think?
Dan Bigger. And Reece Webb.
Yeah, I mean, any mouthy fly off. Fly off Farrell and Bigger are roughly the same, I'd say.
That's one thing.
A negative thing. I mean, what can we take? What good can we take?
I was going to say the other negative thing is how poorly they're doing VAR, which we mentioned it last week, but it does make me think. Mm. I am overall very pleased with the way rugby is officiated.
Yes.
I think there's things that go wrong, but I think overall, the intention is there. The laws are generally changed in the right direction, although there's recently been a few bits of confusion. And I think it's done well. It's not done perfectly, but comparatively, it's done so much better than the way football are doing it.
The question was,
What can we learn?
What can we take from football?
Well, no, but that's a learn, isn't it? It's that for all that we get frustrated with the officiating in rugby, which has become a real big... It feels like that's most of a post-match discussion in these recent internationals.
It can be
really
in some
annoying.
Of them. Yeah, in some of them it can be because it can be so
yeah,
critical.
But I also think that rugby fans are much more pedantic than football fans.
I agree with that.
Much more pedantic. I'll give you one.
But then there are more laws to interpret, therefore more grey areas between where a law starts and ends.
I'll give you one which won't surprise you. I think we could probably learn by the way this England team has conducted itself, which I think has been rather good. I think Gareth Southgate, I mean, he's probably going to be out of the competition by Tuesday. But he's done well. I mean, he conducts himself well with the press. And
do you know what I've got written down? Does Gareth Southgate remind you of anyone?
Stuart Lancaster.
Very, a background in developing young players.
Yeah.
Very happy to put faith in some new, fresh blood. Very calm... steady manner, good relationship with players and media.
Yep.
Untested at the top level.
Yeah.
Soon to go out of a major tournament. I think you're looking at Lancaster with rose-coloured glasses here. Because I need just to remind myself how I felt about him during the World Cup. Which was, he didn't really... I mean, he was set in his ways. He was more interested in getting a group of players together to get to a certain, this is my opinion, to get them as a group to a certain amount of caps, because statistics have told him that a certain amount of caps win more cups. I ended up avoiding picking the best players in order to pursue this cap goal.
I think that was part of it. I wouldn't say that's the main fundamental problem. Because he had, and I don't know how much of that drove some of his selection issues. I don't know if it was purely that or... things like he was so fixated on having Manu, but Manu was never available to him, so he never had the plan B option and tried to plug that gap with Sam Burgess.
That was just insane. That is enough. I mean,
doing it in the Welsh game alone was the weirdest part of that. Anyway,
that's all
ground. But I guess the point being is the World Cup pressure cooker is where you actually learn what someone's about. So Gareth Southgate done a great job till now. Now he's in the knockout stages of a World Cup. And we're about to learn what he's actually got in his locker, because not having gone through that is a massive, massive puts a massive question mark over anybody, and anybody can fail in that environment. And also, I'd say in terms of looking at the Football World Cup, which you can relate this to, just club rugby, national rugby, when the collective is paramount and put first. It's always better than the sum, and when that's better than the sum of the parts, they're the best teams. And look at Uruguay, Russia, teams like Denmark, Sweden, where actually the organisation, the tactics, the unit, and the collective element.
I'm so conflicted on this, because I think it doesn't necessarily make a good team, right? In the same way that societies which are good societies end up with, say, better women's rights, for a great example, it isn't the women's rights that make the great society. So what I'm saying is, once a team is great, it then starts talking about its unity and togetherness. Like, the All Blacks are simply just the best players on earth, all in the same team.
It's interesting, though, because like, you look at Exeter, and it feels like they got that bonding prior to them getting the success. So in that scenario, there is a bit of a chicken and egg question for me. I don't think...
Because, like, the Lancaster experiment, I mean, I literally laughed out loud reading House of Lancaster when he asked them to write on the shirt what it meant to them.
Yeah.
I mean, he wanted to have the culture to create the rugby rather than the rugby creates the culture.
Yeah, fair enough. And at least Gareth Southgate knows his players. It's like, these players... right, we've got some inflatable unicorns. Go in the pool and have a race on them, lads. he knows what they are. There's a ping pong table there. Fortnite in your rooms. Just off you go.
They're
training.
Yeah.
They've taken their own barber out with them.
Have they?
Yeah. So they always look confident. They always look good when they play, and that gives them more confidence. But if you remember, Capello got them tailored tailored kits from Umbro.
They weren't allowed butter on their toast.
Were they?
Under
why?
Capello.
Yeah, under Capello.
Oh yeah, when did this come up? This came up in another interview or chat I've had with someone. Who was it?
I don't know.
I tell you what it was. I was doing TalkSport 2.
Oh yeah.
Name drop. and we were talking about the comparisons between Eddie Jones and Fabio Capello and how Eddie Jones is relentless and all the rest of it. And the contributor on there, who I can't remember his name, was saying, yeah, it's just like Capello, who just eventually wore his players out with things like no better on toast.
Yeah. That's taking that marginal gains to...
Margarine gains.
Yeah.
Hey! Very good, Jay. That's far sharper than I'd expect someone who's had as much alcohol in the last 48 hours as you to have managed. Good going.
Thank you much.
All right, fine. So that's that. So loads of people have suggested things that they'd like us to talk about. So I'll run through a few of these. This is only quick start. Joe Simpkins has said the Genge anecdote and then encouraged other people to retweet if they also want to hear it. And lots of people did.
Well, Ellis Genge was actually a guest of honour at the old Bristolians players' dinner.
So being there with, current club captain and a former player, mm-hmm. We heard an interesting story about his appearance at their club dinner.
Playing on the, trying to play on the slip and slide, which old Bristolians set up. So they set up like a long Viscreen type thing.
I assume so.
And then you must just...
Tarpaulin with fairy liquid.
Something like that. For the players' dinner. So, a tarpaulin-based Ellis Genge story. But if you want the full the full version, you're going to have to find an old Bristolian and ask him.
Yeah, all right. We couldn't do it justice.
No.
And I'm not sure we should be telling it on air either, because it's pretty interesting.
We don't do the same thing. Right, Ben Johnson tweeted at Rugby Podcast, Love Island Sevens, seven players you'd send to the island.
Seven players I'd send to the island.
Yeah, if we were sending a sevens team.
Only send one. You can send one. I'm not sending seven.
All right, fine.
It's ridiculous. Because they'll end up playing sevens. There'll be nothing to watch. I've said his name multiple times in the Love Island podcast. I'll say it again. The one man who I think would really spice things up in the Villa would be Victor Koliashvili, the Claremont number six. The wild man of rugby.
Yeah.
High shot merchant.
Ooh.
Or Willie Mason.
Sonny Bill. I'd love to send Sonny Bill.
Sonny Bill would be dull.
Oh, no, but I'd love to.
He's so serious.
Yeah, he is very
serious.
He's
teetotal.
Joe Marler.
He's very religious.
Joe Marler would be good. Good family man, Joe Marler.
Yeah.
I think Francois Houhard would be a good man to have out there.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of a ladies' man. Very handsome. Well, takes care of himself.
How about JJ Engelbrecht then?
Engelbrecht? God, I've not thought about JJ Engelbrecht for a while.
What, not every night?
Not every night, just before bed.
I would like David Pocock, because he'll actually try and have some deep philosophical discussions.
Difficult. That would be a difficult Love Island to watch. How do you feel about admissions?
Right. There are loads of new kits.
Yes.
Well, I've seen one.
Exeter Chiefs, the Chiefs, have a new kit that they're going with white as their first kit or not.
If white is certainly one of their kits.
Is the new kit there. The European kit?
So they've got the blue
black
one
and the white.
Yeah, so black, white, and then blue is their third European kit.
It's an improvement on their horrible orange kit from last season. And
they've had the pink kit, they've had the orange kit, they've had some monstrosities. You're right, it's an improvement.
The bar was set very low.
So look, they're not backing down, are they?
No.
Using Chiefs logo. In fact, they've really doubled down on their blue kit, and good on them. Interestingly, one of the photos for the photo shoot, and I know this to be very Cornish now, because we were in Cornwall, is paddleboarding.
Yeah, I saw that. Slade and Ben Moon on a paddleboard.
I say Cornish.
Devon.
Yeah. Well,
Exeter's Devon.
Exeter is Devon, yeah.
Right, also, France have got a new kit. Have you seen that?
Lovely, love it.
I'm not the biggest fan.
I love it one time I look at it, and then I'm not sure the next. So it's plain blue, which they've got rid of the sort of squiggly,
good
tight detail on the blue. It's a really royal blue colour, which I love.
It's not quite the same as their old, I think of their kind of probably 91, 93, early 90s Adidas, tricolour Adidas kits.
That's beautiful.
As what it should be.
Le Coq Sportif, it's got like a faux collar. It's kind of a collar, but not there, but it looks old, really old fashioned, and it's got on one sleeve a red and a white band.
Yeah, so you got the flag on one sleeve, but not on the other sleeve.
Love it.
I quite like it. I want to see what I want to see, and that France have disappointed me for years that they haven't been doing, is white shorts with that and red socks.
Yes.
That's an absolute must.
Have we seen the full kit? I can only see the...
No, ooh. That's what I mean. It's got white shorts and red socks is what that France kit demands.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
So there'll be more stash watch as we go through the weeks. And Dougie Andrews just said, lads, your favourite rugby stash ever. And it is exactly what you mentioned. Oh. It is the old 80s/90s France Adidas.
Yeah.
Mm.
Shirts with the three stripes all the way down the arse.
I know everyone's trying to make money now, but there should be some kits, and they should just come to an agreement. Doing like, you know, arguing couples. You know, maybe this is the best relationship for you if you just settle down and you know, and get into it. And I think the France and Adidas combo is one they should look. We're not going to pay you quite as much, but this is why this deal should work. Look what we can do when we both work together.
Yeah. The problem is the French ones in the last few years, they've not been faithful to that old intent.
Mm.
Some of them with the intricate detailing, with the wrong, like a navy blue rather than a royal blue.
Yep. And that deep blue that they were using.
Although I've got the red with gold band.
Oh, yeah, for the 2015 nice. World Cup.
Yeah.
That was very
I've got
that.
Delicious. That is absolutely gorgeous. So they've done some good things, but yeah. I think it should always be Adidas and France.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
Right, I'll come. Any more? Any other stash that you particularly love? The Bath have always had lovely.
Yeah.
When Bath had Adidas, it was great as well. In fact, Adidas have done amazing rugby kits down the years.
Yeah.
The Japan World Cup kit.
Yeah, love that.
It's delicious.
The Brave Blossoms. I do really like. So when you think of the old French kit, it's the early 90s, late 80s, it's the really heavy cotton, the big baggy misfitting. I do like the England 2003 kit because of what it symbolises.
Yes.
That is like the shift from the old to the new.
Yeah.
And at the time, like when you actually look at it now, it looks great on like Lucy and Jason Robinson, for example. But on half the players, it looks all like Jason Leonard.
So that was the Nike
Martin
collar,
Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the collar was a bit high and a bit tight.
It was.
I liked it. So it was. And South Africa had a version of that. I thought it looked lovely.
Yeah.
South Africa had a version and France had a version. They both looked amazing.
Yeah, France had a version.
Jaguares as well.
Jaguares. Jaguares and the... probably
the Argentina kit.
All the Argentina's amazing. The Argentina black or very, very dark blue Sevens kit is amazing.
Yeah. And Russia, that Russia kit that you stash that you bought.
The Canterbury one.
That was lovely.
That's nice.
So there you go. There's some of our favourite stash. We'll come back to some more questions in a bit because there's a few more. But there's plenty of rumours and transfers still doing the rounds, despite the fact that many clubs are already signing in for pre-season training, as you mentioned at the start. Chris Ashton. This is rumbling on. By the time this podcast is up and you're listening to it, there may well be a resolution to this.
Yeah.
So Murad Boujalal has said the ball's in Chris Ashton's court over whether he wants to go back to England.
Yeah.
Would you imagine it's more than sale that he's being offered in terms of English clubs?
It depends on timing and salary cap, in all honesty. He's not going to come cheap. He will probably do a year cheaper than his current Toulon deal, but that doesn't make him a cheap player. So I think there'll be some clubs that just... I think everyone would want him if they could afford him, unquestionably.
There's only one club that can afford him, really.
Newcastle?
Sale.
Worcester?
No, Worcester and Newcastle are spending a lot more than Sale. Sale could get him. Allegedly, the hold-up is they won't pay they'll pay something towards his release. They won't pay everything towards his release. Allegedly, he's willing to pay some of his release himself.
God.
Which obviously can be quite pricey. So, if he does come, I think it'll be to Sale. Because obviously being a northern lad as well, that fits in nicely.
Yeah.
But, well, no, I think Phil's point's more the point. It's that at this point, who has space in their cap?
Sale.
That's it.
Yeah.
So if it's not northern lad, he'd go to.
If it was Exeter,
wherever.
If it was back to Sarries, back to Northampton.
This is a smash and grab to try and get a World Cup spot, which also means the other point is, is it wise to spend a high value, bearing in mind his sole intention is to come back and get into the England squad?
Simply no.
Yeah, and he could spend all that money, get injured the following week, and never even have close to an opportunity, and never get another contract again.
Even if he is fit the whole time, if Eddie Jones selects him for Autumn Internationals and Six Nations, he's gone roughly half the season.
Yeah.
Well, Sale, yeah. So this is where it gets interesting for Sale, right? Sale are in a little bit of a bind because currently they are running around Carrington and Molyneux is wearing 15. If they were to play today, I know obviously there's a long way to go to the season, but that's what they're training with.
Byron.
No.
He must be off on his off.
Yeah.
But he'll be first choice.
But Byron McGuigan comes back in, yeah, and he'll be fullback. But, you know, Byron's been very, very clear. He doesn't like playing fullback. He likes playing wing. He thinks he's substantially better at wing than he is at fullback.
Interesting.
So Ashton's experience at fullback, which, I mean, I don't know if I would... he's good enough for Toulon to do it, I guess.
He cost them a few games, though. Like, genuinely cost them games.
But he
games.
Also scored a record amount of tries.
Yeah, I know. But he was played as a mix. He didn't always play there at fullback for them.
So, but do you know what the breakdown is of wing versus fullback?
In this season, no. From anecdotally, from me, I'd say probably slightly more on the wing, but kind of like 60-40, something like that.
But something will happen, right? Because what's his name has gone? Julian Surveyor has gone to Toulon.
Yeah.
And also, I understand that Josh Tuasova, is it Josh Tuasova?
Mm-hmm.
The other wing?
Yeah.
He was due to go to Lyon. That has now fallen through. So it looks like they might need to get rid of Ashton anyway. So a couple of French clubs are also looking at him.
Interesting.
So he might. So he's gone from maybe getting a pay rise at Toulon to maybe getting a pay rise elsewhere, or getting the big pay rise if he moves over here because of his England money.
I mean, I hope he does.
If he can get it,
I hope he does find a club over here because it would be good to have him in the mix.
And in the rugby dungeon if he comes to Sale.
Absolutely. However, I would, if it was my checkbook, I would not be spending money.
Would you do
unless
for
he was
tears?
Willing to? Unless he was willing to come in for an extended period of time. And was committed to taking a huge pay drop, at least in this World Cup year.
How do you feel about the Haskell deal then?
Well, Haskell, I imagine, is probably at Northampton for
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. But I don't know. But I would guess Northampton are not paying what Wasps were paying him, or anywhere close.
Oh, yeah. I know. He's been paid substantially less.
Yeah.
Substantially less.
There you go.
Because of course it's cap issues.
And Northampton,
and he wants to be there for the shot at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I do. I kind of like the idea. I mean, I do. And I don't like it. I don't like to think that players that are used to one amount of money coming in every month, and now have to accept a substantially less. But it is good to know that the salary cap is actually working.
Yeah.
And it'd be
yeah.
interesting to see where you know. It'd be interesting to see when players, when the salary cap really bites. How they really do value players, because there's a lot of Wesley Schneidering going on, and that means that players are paid by their name value and name recognition. So a lot of people say, "Oh, you can't get Haskell because you know you need to pay him X, Y, and Z." Well,
because he's an England international. Yeah.
Turns out you absolutely don't, and whether that will continue now, like as older players will start to get paid less and less.
Yeah.
Well, and it will be well. The thing is, say Maro Itoje is worth X amount. If his contract is up for renewal, then and he can get X amount plus a little bit more for another club to steal him. That's how the inflation works. It does work top down. It's the best players getting paid more, and then you have to find the polyfiller players, the guys that will come up.
Here's the question.
And look at Wasps. They've signed a load of guys from the Championship as just to get bodies into the squad and hoping that some of them will do a job.
Yeah.
Here's a question then. Maro Itoje. People think he will become the world's best paid player. Is it conceivable that a second row could or should be the world's best paid player?
I think the best paid player will be in the terms of his marketability and his sponsorships. I mean, you can't turn on the telly without seeing him. Even
but
like, his Vitality adverts, his Adidas deal will be worth absolutely. Yeah.
Has he been
fortune.
On any adverts? I can't really.
Yeah. There's one with him, Joe Root, and a female Paralympian athlete, I think, talking to some dog on a bench.
I've not seen that.
Really?
It's Vitality ad, I think it is.
Not seen that.
Yeah.
Because I don't
it's on
feel...
it's on Sky Sports News all the time.
Ah, so I don't feel like I've seen him in many adverts, actually. Mm. I think it could be more recognisable.
To go back to your question, I think no, probably not.
No, I can't see it.
Not to get a second row as... Because they have less influence on the game. Now, that's not to say second rows have no influence on the game. Second rows are absolutely vital. And if your line-out's not functioning, which is mainly... So your line-out caller and your hooker being two most vital people, then you'll lose. If you are failing to retain your ball in key positions, you will lose. So they're very, very important players. But compared to the influence that, say, a kick-and-fly half might have, it is small.
Yeah, I wonder if... The other thing which might happen is captaincies might start going to fly halves more. Think about the NFL. The most expensive player on the field is also charged with the leadership of the team. Very rarely is the quarterback not a captain. Now, they do have two or three team captains. I wonder if, we can't really pay the second row, who used to be our captain, but now is our third lowest earner, and we can't really make him a captain. So I wonder if it'll automatically start going to higher paid players.
Interesting.
I think it's more... So the more I think about the captaincy role, and England do have a problem at the moment with Hartley or Farrell or whoever, the more I think about it, the more your specific captain is less important. The more important is to have the right person making the decision at the right time, whether it's to kick for sticks or kick for the corner, but also have the experienced leadership group. And that is something that I think England in this period have lacked a little bit.
How? I do not know.
And we've said it in the past, but you compare the 2003 team to the current team, and the number of on-field captains and leaders in that 2003 team is incredible. And you look at it now, and you've got some excellent players, but I don't see many of them as standout leaders. I don't think of many of them as standout leaders.
But you put them in Saracen shirts and they're all standout leaders.
I'm not sure. I don't think you describe Billy or Mako.
I would.
Leaders in Saracen.
They lead by example. They lead by example. That's different.
Have you ever heard Billy in particular, when he speaks, he sounds like a leader. When he speaks about the team ethos and how they conduct themselves, I would say that he definitely is a leader. Mauro is definitely destined for some form of captaincy at some point.
Definitely. But Billy has played one England game two England games in last year.
But he has definitely captained Saracens.
Has he?
Definitely captained Saracens.
Are you sure?
Okay.
I'll double check that.
Definitely.
100% sure.
Definitely.
Okay.
So yeah, the more I think it's the wider leadership group. And I do think England have been struggling in that regard.
Where were we?
what was the question?
What were we talking about?
Don't know. England football?
I've completely lost where we were at.
We were talking about signings. Chris Ashton.
Somehow
we're then talking about England leaders.
It's weird, isn't it? We usually start talking about something else and end up talking about Sale, whereas we started talking about Sale.
Is there any other... What other... Oh, yeah. George Smith to Bristol on a six-month deal, is it?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, nice.
So that'll be interesting.
That would be interesting.
For me, that coincided with... So his...
England's vice-captain is Billy Vunipola.
Is he? Is he on the joint vice-captain alongside Mauro?
George Ford.
Mike Brown, George Ford.
Ford, Mike Brown.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of him as a player... Maybe he's starting to wane a little bit, but I don't think they should be looking.
Well, let's see him play first, because we simply don't know.
Well, you're right, we don't know, but he's 38. He's played a lot of rugby all over the world.
But we thought it was waning when he went to Wasps.
I know,
bloody brilliant.
But what the point I was going to make was that when he went to Wasps, so he did a superb job playing. That for me also coincided with the best form that James Haskell has ever had.
Yep.
And they actually spoke about him working with Haskell and the other younger
and
back rowers.
Jack Willis, imagine how much he got out of it. What I've heard is that George Smith would spend loads of time with Jack Willis after training.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I think if they the way they should look at it is, yes, he can plug a gap. He could probably do very well, actually, and give him some of that leadership, but also the potential to develop some of their new talent. That's the exciting bit for me.
Yeah, and Bristol, last time they were in the Premiership, they had lots of talented players, guys like Jason Woodward. You look around, though, and you didn't just talk about leadership with England. You can imagine those young, promising Bristolian lads, and there were lots of them. There wasn't anyone in the tunnel or in the changing room where you look around going out before a game going, it's going to be all right. All right here.
Yeah.
It's sort of people that just make you stand that little inch taller and puff your chest out that little bit more. So I think it's quite a smart signing by Bristol.
Yeah. Mm.
Have you seen some of the drills that they used for helping jacklers jackal?
With like bungee rope, pulling
as
they're over the ball, over like a tyre.
Yeah, so the ball in the tyre and the bungee rope one.
Yeah.
I've completely forgotten the other one. Oh, yeah. This is my invention for a rugby bit of kit. It's like, you know, an apprentice when I say, go and invent something.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, invent a bit of fitness equipment. How about this? How about a rugby ball made out of metal, right? Iron.
Big solid. Solid iron.
Solid, yeah. And it's got a hole in it, which you can put an Olympic bar through. So right in the middle, not alongside, just through.
So you can skewer the ball on a bar.
So point to point.
No, the other way around.
Oh, other way around, okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, across the belly.
And then, do you know those little shoulder things? Do you know the shoulder, when you put the Olympic bar in the thing and you push it up?
Yeah, I know the ones you mean. Yep. Like a little hinged pivot.
Yeah, so it's like a hinged pivot. And usually you see people put on the weights and they do the shoulder exercises, right? Well, if you put that on the floor with my weighted ball, right, and you have different sort of weights, and then you could practice getting over the ball and then basically doing almost like rows on the ball. And you could actually grab it from different directions, and the functional strength would be awesome.
Well,
Except it only goes in one plane of movement, which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, and the difference for that is lifting dead weight compared to a writhing player, a seething mass of writhing players, is very, very different.
Which made that sound quite sexual there, Phil.
Well, what about, right, a platform that holds the ball in and you have to rip it out and you set the platform for different amounts of ripping pressure?
But just some of the best drills you can do with, like, two or three players and a rugby ball, like wrestling, trying to wrestle the ball off each other with one man lying on the ground and one man doing what you're describing with your exercise, but it's actually one of their teammates trying to hold the ball.
Yeah.
That is absolutely exhausting.
It is exhausting. Mm.
Another question we got asked, and I suppose it's almost looping a little bit back towards. Well, no, actually, let's do this one first from Steve Hodgson. And we'll do this briefly because I know this is quite a big topic. But in light of South Africa.
Okay.
In light of Chris Ashton's potential return to England as the only way of getting a World Cup spot, would allowing players who play overseas for England actually affect the domestic game, or could they bring in different types of experiences that might actually help the team in the way that we employ an Aussie or a Kiwi coach, for example?
That's a good point. If they're going to be strict about the England players and not playing abroad, maybe they should be strict about only getting coaches from the Premiership.
That's an interesting point.
Because that's looking at it the other way.
Yeah, that.
But then that's the clubs, isn't it? That's the clubs can do what the hell they want. The clubs can have as many foreign players as they like. There are financial incentives to have English qualified players.
Yeah. The answer to this is, it's not quite so straightforward. They shouldn't be allowed to take players from overseas, because I have to reluctantly admit, although I'm not in favour of the policy per se, it does work for England. There's enough money in the game that they can actually threaten their players, say, do not go to France or you don't get your England money.
They are ruling with the carrot and the stick. They're ruling with the carrot more so, because I think now players that play for England are probably earning as much or more than they would if they were playing in France.
Yeah.
If they play 10 times, 15 times a year for England, absolutely they will be. Absolutely.
Now, this is where I think they've gone wrong, England, which is they've not made sure they nail down the targets that they want. So, I'm just trying to think of a guy who, like Carl Ferns is a great example, who everyone assumed it would be England 7 this year had he gone to Gloucester.
So he's one of the anomalies, I think, recently. I think, so Ashton has obviously gone. There's others who will
Bendy.
Have been.
Benders.
Maybe, but he never really got close to the England team, did he?
he was in and out of it, I guess. But like, he did very well.
But yeah, in his run-up to leaving for Clermont...
I think Clermont, he's done well too.
Yeah.
To be fair.
He's a brilliant player.
Armitage did amazing things over in France.
Yeah.
But again, it felt like that was
a time when England probably weren't desperate. He wasn't like the absolute star in a position.
But desperate or not, the guy who got like two European Player of the Year awards.
Yeah.
Was Johnny Wilkinson in France when he played for England? I'm just trying to think. Well, did he not play Toulon and England?
I think he did against Italy
in the 2011 World Cup.
Yeah, like when he returned. I think you're right. I think he did. And there was some sort of clamour to get him back out of retirement again for the World Cup.
He did. He started playing in Toulon in 2009. So in the 2011 World Cup, he definitely would have been. But that was... So Wilkinson, it is a different time. In 2009 when he left, there wasn't all the players being poached and the issues you had around player access that come to the fore.
England needs to have more clarity in who they want and making sure that they get them. And they can't leave themselves open to criticism. They haven't done everything that they in their power in order to get a player. So like, people will still be thinking now, like, surely, you know, if only had, for instance, Carl Ferns as another ball-carrying back row. I mean, that would be bloody useful for England now.
Oh, yeah, it would be.
Or Stefan Armitage at seven during
a few years ago. Yeah.
That would have been very, very handy.
The quandary is actually look at what it's done for Wales. One of your mantras, JB, is sometimes it's about opportunity. Dan Levy got his shot, and now he's an absolute shoo-in to be in the Ireland squad for the World Cup. And he was a name that people didn't know a year ago. And that's because he got the opportunity. And if you allow players to go, then young players will fill those spaces, and some of them will take that opportunity, and the team will be better for it. The balance is, how will that affect the clubs if the marketability of the Gallagher Premiership is diminished because there are less star players in it, and advertisers aren't willing to spend as much? Therefore, the clubs get a bit less.
Yeah,
that's where that's the quandary. So it comes down to money.
Yeah, and you look at...
It's not even about the national team.
Look at New Zealand and Ireland, who have been two of the best at retaining their players with few teams for them to play in, compared to like Wales are in a better position right now than they have been for a number of years.
I don't like it, certainly where the regions are concerned. Almost like a restraint of trade. I think it's a bit of a harsh way to enforce it, but it does work, and that's what you got. I mean, going back to the money thing, I mean, New Zealand with a little population on the end of the earth.
Yeah.
Are phenomenally successfully financially because they keep some of their players. I mean, what they actually do, and Ireland to a certain degree are doing the same thing. You know, they're getting wealthier and wealthier because they're so well managed. There's a nice balance of understanding the talent, and also they seem to know when to let talent go. Like Sopoanga or Cruden or...
Cruden, I think they've let go. Sopoanga, I think they would have liked to keep. I think he's one of those...
Do you really think that, even though you've just seen Damien McKenzie running the show?
Yeah, McKenzie and Richie Munger, and there's others. Ihaya West is a good... But he's probably like fifth choice or something. Jordy Barrett could come in and do a job. I think they would, because he's more experienced than those others.
I think they'd like to keep them all.
Yeah.
But if you've got to let one go,
I think Cruden was... He was getting... So he's still in his prime. He's probably 29, something like that now. Mm. But I probably used the quote that Eddie Jones previously said for Danny Cipriani. Cruden is someone who is number one or not in there at all.
Yeah.
Cruden's not a backup fly half.
Although he has been a backup fly half for most of his life.
To Dan Carter when he was younger. But then he got the number one position, but then lost it to Beauden Barrett.
Devastating.
Yeah.
Devastating.
There's another, so similar to the Chris Ashton transfer rumour, Dwayne Vermaelen.
Dwayne Vermaelen, I was just about to bring
Dwayne Vermaelen.
The rumour to Bath.
Although
this can't happen because, I mean, Atwood's coming back to Bath, which is great.
Yep. And from what I saw of him playing for Toulon, he looked back to the best when he was playing for England, and rightly so.
And the word is James Wilson is not staying at Bath because of Dave Atwood, and there's not the cap space, as a consequence.
He'll be a good signing for Sale.
And they're not able to make room in the cap by loaning out people like Guy Mercer, Darren Allinson, Luke Charteris. So
is Guy Mercer not with them?
Ospreys.
Was that just a loan?
That was a loan.
Oh, maybe. Zach Mercer, sorry, or whatever. Or however they work it, Zach Mercer is what I meant to say. So is this... Yet the rumour they're going to sign Vermaelen, who, of course, will be a marquee player outside of the salary cap.
Yeah, but you can only have so many marquee players.
Yeah, but Talupe Faletau and Zach Mercer.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he's an amazing player, but is this...
He is an amazing player, but
Is this Bath just not learning from mistakes of the past?
Peak Bath, isn't it? They love buying number eights. I mean, to be fair to Bruce Craig, I would conduct myself in almost an identical manner. You can't have too many number eights.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have...
Start playing on the wing, play him in the centre.
I mean, you actually can play him on the wing. That's the scary thing about number eights. They are literally the best player on the field in terms of physical specimen. Remember the Aussie, what's his name? Radiki Samil.
Samo, the lock number 8/winger.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, one of the...
PSBs that's played on the wing.
Yep, I'm sure...
One of the young French lads, is it Kamara, has played... The one who, I'm sure he played at Stade. 6/8, yeah. And has started for them on the wing.
Yeah,
I mean, there's loads. There's loads of examples.
Kamara. It's one of France's young, talented.
In my ideal team, I'd have 2 8s on the wing, 3 8s in 3 8s in the back row, 2 8s in the second row.
Yeah,
maybe throw in an 8/12.
Yeah.
So overall,
you could 12 and 13. Certainly one on the wing.
And
because most of them they sit in the 15 position as well. For returning high balls, you might as well play one at 15.
Exactly. Are you telling me the Faletau wouldn't be a devastating 12?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to rattle through some questions. One was, and a few people mentioned various things like this, but what is the... they wanted to know the origins of, Phil, your beloved Ulster, beloved Canes, and also your love of statistics. So beloved Ulster is... Phil Stock, we've talked about this before, but yeah, we do get new listeners all the time, so worth it. I can understand why a guy from
Manchester, Whitefield Manchester, is where I grew up, but Manchester born and bred.
From Manchester, being a big Ulster fan, so Phil.
It was very early in the pod, wasn't it?
Yeah,
first season, or maybe early in the second season, when I didn't really have a team, because I'd always been playing.
Fan free agency?
Yeah. And we got people to write in, giving me a
pitch,
description.
Pitch.
So many,
to recruit you as a fan.
Many people did. There were some very good pitches. We even had a pitch from Harlequin's CEO for me to support Harlequin's.
I can't believe you turned that one down.
No. There was no financial incentive with that one,
mind
unfortunately.
You, Harlequin's and Ulster, it would have been an equally rocky ride.
I know. And I think possibly the three that I got closest to were Leicester, Harlequins and Ulster. So none of which would have been a particularly successful couple of years. But yeah, chose Ulster and I've been supporting them ever since. Gaines is just a few years ago when they had so much talent.
As opposed to now when they're threadbare.
So much talent and playing a really, really nice brand of rugby. And so I just... picked them up, bought a shirt, or I think I got given a shirt actually, for winning a little competition, stat backer competition.
And that perfectly segues into the final one, statistics. Where does this come from then, Phil? What's the etymology of your...
I don't know.
Dependence on and love of statistics.
I think it's important to say I do like statistics. My brain works in ways of numbers, and I like to like quantify and metrify things, if that's even a word. I am a little bit cautious of the overuse of statistics and lies, damn lies, and statistics. I read an excellent book last year called A Field Guide to Statistics, which is not rugby based at all. Just it's good advice for anyone in the world. Goes into some detail about a few things.
I feel like we should have a little reading list of Phil. The number of books you've recommended and I've never read.
That's a good one. But it's important to look at them. It's important to understand when to use them and understand when not to use them, I think, because they do tell 1,000 words, but they can be misinterpreted and misused.
And there's a lot of... Is there more of them now being... There's more used now.
Yeah, the accessibility and availability of statistics.
And again, I quite like the again, for example, tackle count, you can look at it on a bit of paper and go, oh, wow, they made 20 tackles. It's like, yeah, but someone making one incredibly dominant hit that caused a key turnover, which led to a try. There's a value attached to things which statistics sometimes doesn't demonstrate.
I was reading an article the other day. What was the thing that Ryan, friend of the pod, told me? It's kind of the mantra that I live my life by now. Because there's a guy that we know, Ryan, who listens to the pod, and he did mathematics in Oxford or Cambridge. And he told us about
it's
something which is right. You don't need to prove it's right. I can't remember what the hell it was.
You know it, so you don't need to prove it.
Yeah, like it's known to be right, so you don't need to prove it. Which is basically how I operate now. I just know it to be right. I'm sick of proving things.
Is that another way of saying confirmation bias?
No. What it is, right, is there are some things that I know are correct, and I'm done with trying to argue with people that don't think like me.
Well, that's quite a close-minded way of looking at things, isn't it? If there's no evidence...
JB's always right, though, Tim.
I'm always right.
Oh, yeah. We've seen this. We've seen this many, many times.
Throughout my life, I have been right. It's just taken a while for everyone else to catch up. And that's just how it works. And anyway, so back to this. There was an article written, I say an article, a blog post, right, about tackle completion not being very, very important. In fact, it's completely misleading. Based on the fact that some teams who win lots of things like Hurricanes and All Blacks don't complete as many tackles.
Saracens.
Because they play a real blitz, which is going to increase the probability of
missed tackles.
But
you'd slow players down enough to then swarm.
But if they did complete all of their tackles, they would be better again. You know,
they would be even better.
Looking at that statistic is so misleading, saying, actually, this team should be good because they miss a load of tackles. That's not how it is.
Completing more tackles is always going to be better.
It's always better. So, if you completed none of your tackles, you would lose, I guarantee.
But it's a, and this is kind of my point, it's like, well, what's the value of it? Because if the only way it's possible to make 100% of your tackles is to press slightly slower... So your feet are planted in a steadier position, so you have the better technique, so you can execute the tackle. Then maybe there's less value in that, and there might be more value in the 8 you make and the 3 you miss, because there's 2 people backing you up in a quick press. This is kind of my point.
So just on that, there was a very good article in the Economist actually a while ago on the most important statistics that correlate with wins. So, for example...
Oh, interesting.
So, the three...
And correlation isn't necessarily causation, but...
Very, very true. So, clean breaks, turnovers won, and then meters run with ball in hand are three that correlate positively with points gained.
Mm. That stacks up to me.
And there's...
The meters gained, I think, is a little bit of a...
Yeah.
So, you will often see games where teams make lots and lots of meters... But they don't combine it with either of those other two. So I think you need the meters made within the clean breaks or with the turnovers won. If you're just making easy meters because your fullback is returning lots of kicks but then getting tackled and shut down, and then you're turning the ball over and then running another 50 meters, it doesn't matter.
Scoring tries correlates highly with winning, too. Right?
Point scored generally correlates positively with winning.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, that is I'll interesting. Make a note of that one.
And the one very good one to finish the statistics bit is on misuse of statistics or misleading statistics from a field guide to statistics, the book, is the average human has one testicle.
True.
Very good. Very, very good. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of
the average human has less than two. The average human.
The average human.
The average man has less than two.
Yes, very correct. Nice. Correct.
I was going to say, yeah, sometimes when I get into these statistical chats, not with you actually, Phil, but like with other people, or I read their work, I think this is so dull. It's so dull when they're trying to... They always use it retrospectively to prove something which they want to prove.
Well, yeah, that's where I think the misuse of it can be bad. Because people look for the statistics that prove their view and their argument.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And everyone can find that for any different point of view.
Yeah.
Ed Dawson, actually, I don't know the answer to this one. Ed Dawson tweeted, whatever happened to friend of the pod, rugby league player Blake?
He's in Canada.
Oh, he's in Canada.
Playing rugby league, but not for the Wolfpack.
Cool. Right, I can leave. Good.
Glad I yeah. Know. And Blake is a throwback to the very, very...
4 years ago. That's the last time I saw Blake.
Hi, Blake.
Three pods or two pods? Or...
Do you think, gone as long as seven.
Do you think he regrets? Do you think he's looked at how well it's gone and how much fun we've had and thought,
I don't think he does, actually.
No?
Which is a weird one. Because he's quite an introvert. It's quite a complex character, is our Blake. And I don't even think he likes rugby too much. In fact, I don't think he still plays. I say he plays rugby league. I'm not sure he does. I think he's just packed it in completely.
When does the rugby championship start?
Well, good question. Yeah, give me 2 seconds.
I just wanted to check. We don't need to preview that in any way.
No, we're back in. We're weeks, if not months away, because we're back into the final rounds of Super Rugby.
Oh, of course, yes.
So we've got to have the culmination of Super Rugby, and then there'll be a couple of weeks break.
So we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and I'm just looking at. There's some absolutely brilliant suggestions of things to talk about. Which will do fantastic, great talking points for the close season. We're deliberately not getting into a look ahead to the 2018-19 domestic season just yet. A couple more weeks' time and we'll start thinking about that. But there's plenty more to wrap up. And there's also some pretty meaty talking points. And particularly in relation to just tying off all the loose ends from the season just gone. But the Rugby Championship is something, international rugby, that it will be on the horizon. When is it?
18th of August it starts.
Okay,
so we've
cool.
got 6 weeks now. So
really? Yeah, that's a long
you have
time.
The final rounds of Super Rugby and then get into that.
Just as a throwback to one of the other questions I've thought of, right? Which
The Love Island 7.
Yeah, yeah. How did you know? Which player would you put into Love Island?
Oh, right. It was that.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah, 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 that's yours. Which Love Island contestant would you put into a sevens team?
See, this requires anyone listening to watch Love Island.
Well, I for one, I've not watched a single second.
But
you
listened to the Love Island pod, yeah?
I've not. No, I listen to more than enough of your podcast as it is.
Whatever.
Eyal is the little nippy scrum half, maybe.
Megan. I'd throw Megan in just to cause absolute chaos.
Okay.
I don't know where, I don't know what any
of Love
that
Island,
means.
Listen to the Love Island pod.
Nice advert.
Very good. One of the questions you already covered. Phil was already on it. Matt Phillips said, given the self-flagellation going on in football over VAR, is rugby better with the TMO? Let me broaden that out more slightly then. You talked about the state of refereeing, but there was a couple of decisions. Maybe if in this down period, do World Rugby get together and have a little review and plot ahead to the World Cup? Because presumably any law variations that come in for this season will be in play.
I think they would,
for the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, I think so. I think anything that's going to be in play for the World Cup will have already been decided.
Okay.
It will be introduced in this season.
That seems
fair.
But Israel Folau's wife tweeted. Did you see it?
No, I've not seen this. I've missed this one.
So Israel Folau was given a retrospective red card and a one-match suspension for his tackle on Rob Carney in the Ireland game, final Ireland game.
Yeah.
Fine, okay. I don't agree, but fine, I'm okay with it. I understand. Letter of the law and all that. He appealed. It was turned down. Israel Folau's wife tweeted with a video of another incident in the game.
Uh-oh.
Where Rob Carney does pretty much exactly the same to Israel Folau, for which there was no citing. No retrospective suspension. Now, that not being spotted doesn't mean that Israel Folau should necessarily get off. That's not the point. But I think one thing probably a lot of rugby fans would echo is a feeling that there's a lack of consistency.
Yeah, consistency is so important. To relate this to football, I think inconsistency is a massive problem with football, because you can see 5 challenges in the box, and 3 will be given as penalties, and 2 will not be given as anything and play on, or maybe 1 will be given as a dive and a yellow card. Okay. They'd all exactly the same. No one can look at them and say, that should definitely be a penalty, or that's definitely a dive, or whatever. Rugby, I think, for the most part, as I said before, is in the right direction, but we are starting to see, like the baffling decision of the Benjamin Fall red card and then subsequent inquiry and statements on that, which contradicts stuff that we thought was cemented in a position that, rightly or wrongly, whatever your stance on that, everyone looks at that and says, yeah, he's made contact, he's been reckless, the player's landed on his head, tick that box, tick that box, tick that box, we know that's a red card, to now in a position where they've thrown this whole thing about both incidental incidents prior to that and then intent, which creates it's a minefield.
That's such a stupid one, right? Because we were just getting used to it. And just because your intent isn't to cause harm, right, looking at it like this, it doesn't necessarily mean that your actions didn't cause the harm, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
which is ridiculous.
And rugby,
I don't intend to run someone over when I'm drink driving.
Yeah.
But it's my reckless actions which have led to this.
And so they created the term for reckless play, which actually covers, so it's doing it without kind of, it's without enough control that if then you do something that is subsequently dangerous, you don't have the intent, but you had a lack of control, that is a red card offence in instances. So they defined that well to take intent out of it, and now this has muddied the waters. So that, and I suspect that will create, again, inconsistency. And
I wonder if we could have an NFL fair catch style rule in rugby.
So what is
like a mark?
Similar. The rule would be, if you kick and the opposition player shouts, my ball, you're not allowed to challenge him for that ball, but you can hit him as soon as he lands.
So the danger, you'll get two players both shouting, my ball.
The two from the same team. Do you mean?
No, two players, like...
No, so if I kick it, only the opposition can call for it.
But then you're taking that tactical kicking out, and then that tactical kicking
is beautiful as well.
And it actually leads to more open field running.
Well, if the ball bounces first, it's open.
Yeah, yeah, but
so
no, if someone...
Along the floor,
so if someone jumps into the air, beautiful take, lands mid-run, and the defensive line is not a uniform flat line, then that is some of the best open field running. That leads to some of the best counter-attacks and best tries.
You don't want to risk taking that out. Over the last couple of seasons, the number of tries they scored which start in their own half.
Yeah.
Why would that change?
Well, people
wouldn't kick because they're giving possession away.
Right,
yeah.
You might actually
The competition away so teams don't kick. Or they'll kick, but they'll change. They won't do a bomb that can potentially get that. They'll change just to try and find grass. So it will have massive... We all talk about the unintended consequences.
Yeah. Doesn't sound so bad on the face of it, but it would be a different game.
It would be.
Now, I watched... there's one thing which I quite like. I've got into AFL recently.
Oh, really?
I really like it. I was watching Hawthorn v the Crows. It's all on BT Sport as well. It's really good.
Excellent. It's a good advert for BT Sport.
Yeah, it is.
Do you have some link to BT Sport?
that's completely irrespective. So I was watching the AFL and I loved it, right? Because they did this law came up a bunch of times where they said, effectively, let the boys play when there was a high contact headshot. Any time the player with the ball dips, crouches, lowers their head, lowers their body height, it's basically a
free for all.
Tough shit. If you get a hit on the head, well, you crouched over. What do you expect?
Yeah,
I loved it.
Do you want to hear my conspiracy theory about no? Hold on. So, I think
I genuinely think that would be a good rule in rugby.
But it will never happen to him, right? Because it's not about what is good for rugby. It's about the noise in the background. It's about a small minority who don't like any sort of physical contact in sport whatsoever. And I think it's more to do with the point that they don't really like competition in general. And more noise is made. And I think that it's a very easy stick to beat rugby with, which is the concussion stick and the head injury stick and the injury stick.
But do you know what this is like?
It's never going back.
Do you know what this is like? This is like there are a bunch of schools in England. There was an article about it today. I think maybe 50-odd schools now have implemented a rule where skirts are banned.
I've seen that, hilarious.
So everyone has to wear trousers. So rather than create freedom so that anyone can wear a skirt and anyone can wear trousers who wishes to, due to whatever factor, no, everyone has to wear trousers and nobody can wear skirts. It's just it's an odd adding rules and adding regulations rather than adding freedom and adding a let the boys play kind of mentality to it.
I'm sure kids will be referred to only by numbers soon. So no judgment is made.
Or calling someone a kid will be ageist.
Yeah, absolutely.
How you're just patronising your children. You're not treating them as the human being they are.
I do hope that this meteor hurries up and ends the world sooner or later. That's my overriding hope.
Right. Anything else on anyone's agenda at this point? There's lots we haven't got to.
Yeah.
For which...
Well, shall we call it a day? Because
There's lots we haven't got to. However, we've got plenty of time and we will... We haven't ignored you if your tweet, for example, hasn't been mentioned.
Well, I think we ignored some people. We read them before, didn't we? And we actually laughed at how boring some of them were. So, you know. We'll ignore them.
I can say that's an actual barefaced lie.
Yeah. just a nasty, horrible lie. There is one thing to mention, which was one of the few games of rugby this week was Samoa versus Germany.
Yes.
In the playoff.
Did Germany win?
The Europe-Oceania playoff.
Yes, as part of the route to decide who plays in...
Did Germany win?
In the...
Was JB's question.
Rugby
Germany
World
must
Cup.
Have won this.
Emphatically no.
No.
What?
66-14 or something like that.
Wow.
Now, I think Germany had a much stronger team than they put out. I think their Peter Hans Weil's players were available. But I think... So...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't think, reading into this, that Spain would have given Samoa a game.
No, they
would have given them more of a game, but probably not. The score lines make you think, on the face of it, well, because Spain beat Germany by 80 points.
Well?
I'm not sure is the honest answer. But yeah, they beat him by 80 points. Samoa beat him by 60 points, so Spain beat Samoa. I don't think that's what you can take from it, because it's two very different German teams.
Mm.
You can't say categorically either way. But.
No, but that means that Germany go into the repechage against Canada.
So I think there is a second leg, but will be done, and then yeah.
And I think it will end up, I think it might be Brazil or Canada. I don't know. I think Canada have to come through their own playoff or... No, they lost to the... Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I think it's going to be Germany against Canada for the final World Cup spot.
When we all know that should go to a Barbarians team, selected by the cast-offs from everyone else.
And Chris Ashton could just stay in...
Stay in France, earn mega money. If he didn't get selected...
Barbarians would be so good.
It would be brilliant.
Just one more thing from me. For those of you that read Twitter and... follow certain rugby things, probably speaking for all of you here, just a quick get well to Neil Fissler, who's just in a spot of bother at the moment. So wish you all the best, Fiss, and hopefully you'll be recovered sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. No, I had no idea about that.
But
obviously goes without saying. So it's a really small rugby community, and the more and more you do in rugby, the more you realise actually it's really small. Right, we will be back again to talk about more, and JB and Phil are going to go and take a Barocca and have a 16-hour sleep.
Unlikely, in 12 minutes time Love Island starts.
I am going to do the former rather than the latter.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.